You're in the middle of nowhere, with the day fading to a pale band on the horizon. From the descending dark, a bus pulls up, brightly lit inside, but with no name, no destination. The door shuttles open before you. There is no driver. Do you climb aboard? Of course you do. It's why you're here. Welcome to the Gray Line.
Welcome back to part two of Blood Drive. We rejoin Police Detective Renee Villafort as she leaves Amos Pearl's motel, having just viewed the last remaining videotape from his secret hidden cameras, and perhaps unwittingly, falling under its inexplicable curse. But first, a brief informative interlude from our mysterious host. Fact 3. Vampires can turn into bats. Now this one's just flat out ridiculous. And if you think about it, who'd really want that power anyway? I mean, back in the Dark Ages, sure, maybe. Get invited in as the dashing count, then escape the place as a bat once the deed is done. But back then, people crossed themselves with the sign of a bat. It was a portentous omen. Nowadays, are you kidding me? Seeing a bat around your apartment ain't portentous. It just means the landlord needs to call an exterminator. Besides, where would your clothes go? You'd need a new change of pants at every stop. It's hard to strike fear into the hearts of men when you're running around butt naked. Nah, turning into a bat would be uncomfortable and pointless. But vampires, well, they can control bats, though. We can summon them, even see through their eyes, use them like spies. Bats and lots of other little things that are always around, underfoot, hidden, just out of sight, rats, mice, even spiders. People think vampires know everything. They think we can read minds to the point we're basically omnipotent. Truth is, we have just thousands of tiny little informants, like, everywhere. It was raining when Renee left the Plaza Inn Motel. It came down in hard, blatting sheets, beating into spray across the cracked parking lot and streaming a halo around the neon sign. She ran to her duster and threw herself behind the wheel, dragging the door shut with a slam. She shook the rain from her hair, blew out a hard breath, then looked down at the radio handset below the dashboard. She considered unracking it, calling in to dispatch to Steve Hodgkin on night duty, but what would she say? It wasn't just that she had a murder without a body. It was that she had no evidence of a murder in the first place. Pearl had destroyed the videotape. There was no telltale bloodstain, no incriminating weapon, no probable cause or motive. All she had was her own testimony of what she'd seen on Pearl's little TV screen. And what she'd seen had been confusing at best. She could almost tell herself that it had been something from a movie, from some bad George Romero ripoff, perhaps with Vincent Price as the older gentleman vampire and Rob Lowe or Emilio Estevez as the clueless victim. Except for the harsh, merciless angle of the hidden camera, which included no cuts, no zooms or pans, just that single, unblinking shot of the shadowy man bent over his skinny, younger companion, clamped onto his neck like a lamprey, his cheeks bulging obscenely and then emptying with each gulping swallow. The skinny guy's life slowly, visibly draining away. The gaping, ragged black wound left in his throat like a smiling, toothless grin. And then, 40 minutes later, the figure getting up from the bed, moving jerkily in spastic, clumsy lunges like a thing unused to being caged in the brute meat and bone of a human body, a thing still learning how to drive some awkward, detested avatar. Despite her words, Renee had known it was the dead man the instant she'd seen the shape lurch across the screen. It was in the sweep of his thick hair, the angles and lines of his body, the subtle points of his jaw and nose, even in silhouette, even through the grainy black and white video image. It was clearly the dead man. The rational part of her brain had rejected that knowledge, of course, because dead people, and there was no question that the young man had been dead, simply didn't stand up, tidy up their own murder scene, and shamble away into the night. She looked at the radio handset, but left it hanging on the rack. Instead, she sighed again, shook her head as if to clear it, and started the car. The wipers swiped at the blatting rain, only half helping. She shunted the shifter into drive and steered hard to the left, angling out of the plaza's parking lot and onto the deceptive, vaguely decrepit normalcy of Walton Way. Pearl said he would telephone if he heard any more from the man calling himself Trey Fiore. Renee told him that she would stake out the plaza's parking lot on the day of the reservation. She would watch for any suspicious characters, particularly those fitting the description of the older man on the videotape, particularly anyone driving a brown Datsun. She intended to do this less because of Pearl's clumsy threat of supernatural retribution, although after viewing the tape, this threat seemed less implausible than she was willing to admit. But because the voice on Pearl's answering machine may be her only lead on whatever had happened in room 26, she wanted to question the man, if nothing else. Thinking that, she drove home and tried to put the memory of Amos Pearl and his damned videotape out of her head for the time being. It was no easy task. And yet, life tends to assert itself, regardless of any wayward intrusions of the otherworldly. Renee Villefort had other cases to attend to. She had a week of court dates testifying in the trial of a prostitute who had stabbed her pimp 7 times with his own switchblade. She had other lesser cases to variously document, investigate, and interview witnesses or suspects about. A week passed, and she heard nothing from Amos Pearl at the Plaza Inn Motel. Until the following weekend, as she sat drinking coffee at her kitchen table, catching up on the mildly amusing antics of Beetle Bailey in the Tribune Sunday Funnies. The wall phone rang, and she looked up at it, debating whether to bother answering it or not. She got up, taking her coffee with her, thinking it would probably be her mother calling from Macon, or somebody trying to sell her a subscription to the Ladies' Home Journal. Instead, it was Amos Pearl, and he was frantic, panting into the phone and blurting out almost before she uttered a hello.
He changed his reservation.
Renee blinked into the morning gray of her kitchen, frowning, half annoyed, half alert.
Mr. Pearl? How'd you get this telephone number?
Information services. How else? What does it matter? Didn't you hear me? He changed his reservation. There was another message on my machine this morning. He's coming today. He'll be here in a few hours. You have to come now. Come and bring your gun.
Calm down, sir,
Renee said, reverting to her professional police voice. Her mind, however, was leaping ahead, already sharpening toward action.
If you find yourself in any danger, don't call me. Call the police at the first sign of trouble. Do you understand?
You aren't listening to me, detective. This isn't a job for the police. This is a job for somebody who knows what I'm up against. Only you know what that is, and only you know that you'll be next.
Mr. Pearl, your threats don't concern me. Get this straight. I'm coming over because the man who called you might know something about a possible murder. I intend to detain and question him in the course of my investigation. That is all.
Tell yourself whatever you want, but you are coming, right?
I'll be there in half an hour.
Well, hurry it up then.
Renee hung up the kitchen phone and set her coffee, half drunk, next to the sink. 28 minutes later, she was backing her duster into the same parking space at the Plaza Inn Motel, this time under glaring morning sunlight. The parking lot was completely empty, the neon sign dark, except for a flashing red NO next to the painted word VACANCY. She was still squinting up at this, the Duster's engine idling sedately, when the passenger door wrenched open, startling her badly. Pearl dropped into the passenger seat, tugged the door shut, and glared aside at her, his eyes bulging behind his black spectacles.
"Go, go, go!"
he urged impatiently, rapping the dashboard with one long, knuckly hand. Renee boggled at him angrily.
"Go where? Pearl, what do you think this is, a taxi service? I'm here to stake out your place of business. Do you know what that means?"
"I don't care what it means. I only care that you get me out of here. He can't get to me if he can't find me. You drive, and you decide where to go, because that way he can't read my thoughts and follow us."
Renee spoke softly, mostly to herself.
"You're completely nuts,"
she mused, and shook her head wonderingly.
"Oh God, what have I gotten myself into?"
"They can read minds,"
Pearl insisted emphatically, tapping his temple hard enough to produce a series of unpleasant little thumps.
"I have been studying up on them. Vampires are low-grade telepaths. They can implant suggestions, change the way people see them, read their victims' thoughts. We can't just stay here and wait to be cornered. Gun or no gun, you won't be a match for him when he shows up. We have to hide."
Renee nodded decisively, then reached forward and cranked off the ignition key, killing the engine. She raised both hands, the keys dangling in her right, and spoke as if to the steering wheel.
"All right, Mr. Pearl, you know what? This has gone far enough. I'm not going anywhere with you. You are getting out of my vehicle before I radio the station and have a couple officers come and remove you. And you are going to get a grip on yourself, or I will have you arrested for interfering with an investigation. Am I clear?"
Pearl gaped at her, his mouth opening and closing almost exactly like a beached fish. His eyes jittered behind the thick lenses of his glasses.
"But you saw the video."
"I saw a video, but I am nowhere near certain that I trust what I saw in it. For all I know, sir, that was something you yourself concocted for your own reasons. You've increasingly shown that your grasp on reality is sketchy at best."
She saw his eyes dip suddenly and knew what he was looking at. Her service revolver was in a black holster on her hip, snapped neatly with a security strap. She clutched the car keys and lowered her closed hand to the holster, covering it.
"Don't you even think about it."
He seemed to collapse into himself. He slumped and dropped his head back under the white vinyl seat.
"You can't just treat this like any other case, can't you see that? This isn't going to end up written up in some official report. When this man shows up, you aren't just going to cuff him and book him like Dano on Hawaii 5-0, don't you see that?"
He turned to glare wildly at her again, his movements frantic. He was cycling up into a full-on tantrum. Renee observed this with professional calm.
"Sir, get out of my car and back into your home. If there is any cause for concern, I will be right here, and police backup can respond in a matter of..."
Her voice trailed away as her gaze shifted past Amos Pearl's trembling head and boggling eyes. He continued to stare at her, but his expression melted from angry fear to wary alarm.
"Oh God, what? What are you thinking?"
"Are there any other entrances to this parking lot other than the one I came in by?"
she asked, still not meeting his eyes, still looking fixedly past him.
"There's just the Walton Way entrance."
He shook his head.
"The lot goes around and back up the other side, but it's fenced the whole way around."
She nodded past him, her eyes still unmoving.
"Then how did they get in?"
Pearl jerked in his seat as if electrocuted. He lurched around and pressed a hand to the glass of the passenger's window. He uttered a breathless little shriek. Parked in the far corner of the previously empty lot was a sporty brown car, angled to face the Duster head-on. It was a Datsun 280Z, road dusty but immaculate, apart from a bumper sticker on the right front bumper. "If it ain't country, it ain't music." As they watched, the car's pop-up headlights snicked open and flashed a light.
"It's him!"
Pearl shrilled, his voice so high and rasping that it was barely audible.
"He's come! It's too late, you stupid woman! You've got to get me killed!"
"Shut up,"
Renee said, still in that calm, staccato monotone.
"I need you to stay in the vehicle. Keep the doors locked until I signal."
With her right hand still covering her holster, she reached for the door handle with her left. Pearl grabbed her right wrist.
You can't go out there.
He rasped, his eyes bulging like boiled eggs.
He'll kill you or bewitch you, and then he'll come for me.
Renee opened her mouth to respond, to command him to take his hand off her, but the words faded as her gaze drifted upwards toward the sky over the brown Dotson. Things were swirling there, floating and dipping like newsprint in an updraft. Except that they weren't newsprint pages. They were bats. Dozens of them. They swooped and fluttered in a silent cloud, stitching the air over the crouching car, reflecting in its windshield and hood. The car's dead headlight eyes glared patiently. Pearl glanced back over his shoulder again and jolted again in his seat.
Bats!
He chirped, his voice climbing into a falsetto.
Bats at 9 a.m. Don't you see them? You have to drive. Take us away from here, please, detective.
Renee felt herself nod slowly, dazedly, her eyes still locked on the inexplicably swirling cloud.
Maybe you're right. We need backup. This isn't right.
It was far worse than that, she knew, but she couldn't quite bring herself to admit it. Dreamily, she reached and slotted the key back into the duster's ignition. She twisted it, and the engine cycled, cranked, chugged faintly, and then died. The Datsun's headlights twinkled faintly in the near distance. Renee looked down at the key in the ignition.
It's never done that before.
He's cursed us!
Pearl nearly screamed, beating frantically at the dashboard and passenger window with his hands.
You waited too long, and now he's cursed the car!
Shut up!
Renee barked, her professional facade cracking.
Just shut up and sit still!
She twisted the ignition key again, held it. The duster cranked wheezily. The engine tried to turn over, but didn't. It merely whined weakly, its strength fading with each cranking cycle.
Harry's dead.
Renee frowned to herself. She tapped the accelerator, but it was stiff and dead beneath her foot.
He's coming!
Pearl shouted, turning in his seat and planting both hands against the window glass.
Oh God, he's coming!
Renee glanced up, looking through Pearl's splayed fingers on the passenger window. Sure enough, the Datsun was now rolling forward, its bumper grinning benignly, its headlights glinting like dimes in the dull sunlight. Renee tried the ignition again. The engine barely half-turned, then coughed and fell silent. The switch clicked impotently in her grip. She let it go. Still glaring out the passenger window, Pearl flailed back with his left hand, scrabbled at Renee, clutched a fistful of her shirt sleeve. He tried to speak, but his voice was barely a rasping babble, a thin ribbon of terror. The Datsun was 50 feet away, still tooling slowly forward, its windshield a mute reflection of the sky and its entourage of bats. Renee stamped the accelerator, jerking her arm out of Pearl's frantic grasp, and cranked the ignition again. This time, the duster rumbled to life. The accelerator thumped down beneath Renee's foot. The engine revved to a throaty roar. Renee racked the shifter into drive and stamped the accelerator again. The duster spewed gravel, spun its wheels against the broken pavement, and finally surged forward, slewing out of the parking space and fishtailing toward the hotel's dark sign and the road beyond. Peripherally, as the duster plowed ahead, Renee saw the Datsun brake gently. In her rearview mirror, its headlights darkened and folded away as if going to sleep. That's okay, the car seemed to say. We can play it your way if you like. Go on, I'll catch up to you later. She angled onto Walton Way so hard that the undercarriage bottomed out, banging over the hump of the entrance, but Renee didn't brake. Instead, she accelerated, swerving across the morning deserted lanes of Walton Way and toward the city beyond. Pearl was panting in the passenger seat, slumped backward, one hand clutching the door armrest, the other clamped on the edge of the seat. He whined with every hyperventilating exhale.
Stop that right now, Pearl.
Renee commanded over the throttle of the duster's engine.
I need to think, and you need to shut the hell up while I do it.
Pearl lolled in his seat.
Where are you taking me?
He asked weakly, and then jolted upright.
No, don't tell me. He can read my mind. He'll know.
Shut up, I said!
Renee pushed the accelerator as the stoplight ahead blinked yellow.
We'll go to the station. He won't dare follow us there.
She expected Pearl to object, but he didn't. He merely lolled in his seat, muttering shrilly to himself as she sped ahead, weaving through the light morning traffic. The sun was a leaden ball behind a gauze of clouds, deadening all shadows, making the daylight unnaturally flat. Fortunately, the police station was only a few blocks ahead. The stoplight at 13th Street turned yellow, and Renee was braking to stop for it when Pearl suddenly jumped in his seat. He let out a watery scream and jabbed a pointing finger toward the windshield. Renee saw it. Rolling to a stop at the corner of 13th and Walton Way was a brown Datsun. It braked sedately, and the headlights popped up. They flashed a welcoming greeting. The turn signal blinked on. It was turning to join them.
It's him!
Pearl cried breathlessly.
It's him!
That's impossible,
Renee said flatly, but she knew better. It was indeed the same car that they had just left behind in the Plaza Inn parking lot, right down to the road dust and the bumper sticker on the front bumper. If it ain't country, it ain't music. There was no way it could be there. No way it could have traversed the side roads fast enough to catch up to them here. But here it was, nonetheless. The darkened windows reflected the sky blankly. Half a dozen bats skirled over the car, looping the telephone and stoplight wires. Pearl turned an accusing glare on Renee.
It's because you told me where we were going,
he hissed in a sudden low, hushed voice.
You told me, and now he knows. We can't go there now. Everybody will be in danger.
Renee knew that the only skin Pearl was worried about was his own. And yet his words haunted her. The guy in the Datsun may not be what Pearl thought he was, but he was clearly unhinged somehow. What if he was packing a weapon? A sawed-off shotgun or a pair of midnight specials, one stuffed in each jeans pocket? He might follow them into the station and open up on whoever he saw first. Crazier things had certainly happened. She looked down at the radio handset in its rack. No time to warn them properly. The station was less than a block away. The stoplight clicked over to green. On impulse, Renee cranked the steering wheel hard right and stamped the accelerator. The duster surged around the corner, passing the Datsun in the opposite direction. For a single second, both cars were barely 5 feet apart. And still, Renee couldn't so much as see a shadow behind those blind, darkened windows. She sped on, leaving the other car stuck at the light facing the other direction. Pearl, thankfully, remained silent. He stared straight ahead, his eyes jittering, his mouth pressed into a taut little frown. Renee turned again at the next stoplight, this time left. As she angled randomly through the city, she checked the duster's mirrors constantly for any sign of the brown Datsun.
Out of the city,
Pearl finally said, seeming only slightly calmer.
Don't tell me where. Just get us out of the city.
Renee zigzagged through Turpin Hill and Bethlehem and finally out into the open country, approaching the South Carolina border. After half an hour of random driving, they crossed the Savannah River toward the small town of Beach Island. Renee looked up as they passed a billboard for a place called the North Shore Motel. Color TV, air conditioning, free HBO. It was 5 miles ahead, according to the sign. Renee nodded to herself. It would have to do. She checked the rearview mirror again. Nothing. Still accelerating, the duster passed the billboard for the North Shore Motel, barreling on into the midday sunlight. On the back side of the billboard, unseen by either Renee Villefort or Amos Pearl, dozens of bats hung in shadow, chittering, their oil droplet eyes watching, their leathery wings trembling with the inevitable eldritch hunger of their master. This has been part two of Blood Drive, a Gray Line three-part series. Listen to part three, the conclusion, to learn who, if anyone, lives, and the truth about vampires and sunlight. The Gray Line is written and produced by me, G. Norman Lippert. Blood Drive features the voice talents of Jeannie Lynn as Renee Villafort and myself as Amos Pearl and sundry other characters. If you are enjoying our treks along the forgotten back roads of the beyond, do hit subscribe, give us a rating and review, and as always, tell all of your friends and a few choice enemies.